Coming over, make it a double.
Studies show that those who overindulge exhibit signs of arrogance.
I don't count my drinks because I'm the president.
Overconfidence.
This is the day we stop the seas from rising. Or was it yesterday?
The inability to think clearly on one's own.
Where's my teleprompter? I gotta talk to those kindergarten kids.
You think you're funny, but no one else does.
Let's give the Dalai Lama a set of cufflinks and send him out the back door.
Mr. President, let's don't do that.
And a profound inability to listen to others.
Rama's funny. You don't know funny.
If a friend, relative, or leader of the free world exhibits any of these warning signs, don't let them drive, operate heavy machinery, or sign any important documents.
Where's that health care bill?
And consider moderating their alcohol intake before it's too late.
Excellence in Broadcasting presents Liberals of Genius.
Liberals of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. President of the United States.
President of the United States.
You single-handedly managed to choke all the life out of the world's greatest economy in record time.
10% unemployment.
No one else could have apologized more, spent more, or built a rat maze healthcare system from hell that only the IRS could love.
What were you thinking?
Thanks to you, FDR will be known as a conservative, Carter will look presidential, and Joseph Stalin won't seem like such a bad guy.
Joe was misunderstood.
So crack open a good book, sit on your butt, and help your buddies with a snowball's chance in November.
Mr. President, the one we weren't waiting for.
All right. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Today's date, November 16th, 2011. Beautiful Alexandria, Virginia. The United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. You know, this past summer I attended my first, high school, my 30th year high school reunion. And I learned quite a bit during the course of that reunion. I learned that a lot of the ladies, my fellow classmates, thought I was really cute. They were afraid to approach me. A couple of the ladies said that Patricia Jones, although she was pretty, some of the ladies didn't think she was pretty enough to be with me. I was deeply flattered. I learned these things at my high school reunion. I also learned that some of my fellow students thought I was mute. They thought I was a special needs student because they rarely ever heard me. They never heard me speak. Some of them. They'd never heard me utter a single word all throughout high school. But I was recognized. They knew who I was, not just because I attended all three reunions, 10, 20, and 30, but because I was recognized as a student. And I had quite a few friends. I was a geek. I was a geek in high school. I spent a lot of my time in the study hall reading comic books with my fellow geeks. And back then, in the 1970s, being a geek was not cool. But as we learned, being a geek, well, that whole thing about the jocks pumping our gas and those people who thought they were cool one day growing up to wait on us, they're waitresses and waiters now. They're the ones who come out, the AAA guys that come out and change your tires for us just because we don't feel like doing it. They're the ones who work for us now. But back then, being a geek was not a good thing. Being a nerd was a bad thing, according to the cool people. Well, as is written in my show page, Tuesday's American Thinker featured a blog by Rick Moran, in which the writer commented on the unseemliness of the president golfing with Robert Bobby Titcomb, a, quote, boyhood friend. end quote, who had recently pleaded no contest to a charge of soliciting a prostitute. Now, for me, the significance of this story was not the president's questionable regard for decorum, but the fact that Barack Obama actually has a boyhood friend. Ever since he appeared on the political scene, there seems to have been a dearth of anyone claiming to have known him back when one would think such people would be coming out of the woodwork. Now, we've talked about this before. It appeared for a while there that Barack Obama was the brother from another planet, that he just came down, ran for office, became state senator, then a senator on the national level, and then president. And there, he had no past whatsoever. Have you ever heard from anyone who remembers young Barry from his school days in Jakarta, or from any of his prep school pals from Honolulu's Pahanalu school? Nope. Mr. Titcomb was arrested in Honolulu, where he presumably resides, but there was no mention of the manner or venue in which he and Mr. Obama became acquainted. Nor was there any mention of whether the two men ever referred to each other as homeboy or homie or my N-word or dog. Perhaps Barry and Bobby were choir boys together. Could that be the case? How about classmates from Obama's days at L.A.'s Occidental College? Nope. Or from Columbia or Harvard? Nope, nope. If such a person were to come forward, he or she might even shed some light on the mystery of what Obama's grades were there, since so many people made such a big deal out of George Bush's C-level grades, the fact that he attended all these prestigious schools and maintained only a C average, which in any other college would probably be the equivalent of a B plus or an A. But no matter. Particularly noteworthy, in the midst of women surfacing to tell tales allegedly from Herman Cain's past, I'm not aware of a single, not a solitary woman ever kissing and telling about Barack Obama, even if only to say that he was always a perfect gentleman. No woman ever came out to say he was a good kisser. No woman came out to say, hey, I made out with Barack Obama in high school behind the, in the gym room, in the locker room. Or no woman ever came out and said, hey, I dated Barack Obama in high school. Or I dated Barack Obama in college. He was a great guy. He still is. Not one single person. Not one single person. Oh, there's the occasional Marxist and socialist who have come out and they've said, well, you know, Barack Obama was part of this group that I was a part of, the socialist group or Marxist group or pseudo-communist group. We never really talked a lot, but I know he attended a lot of the meetings and he was very much supportive. Yeah, those stories have come out in droves. But nobody's ever come out and said, hey, yeah, me and the president, or as black people call him, the prez, we were all good. We were buddies. We hung out together. Then again, considering that in his autobiography, Obama admitted to dealing cocaine. Yes, he did. You'd think there'd be some lurid tale to be told, such as, I bought my coke from Barack, or I bought my crack from the future president, or I smoked a doobie with the man who would become the future president of the United States, or I shared a crack pipe with the man who would become president of the United States, and who knew? Just goes to show that you could be smoking crack with a crackhead one day, and he's president the next. When Barack Obama admitted that he sold cocaine, that he dealt cocaine, he sold it, sniffed it, snorted it, you'd think somebody would come out and say that I shared a needle or a crack pipe or sniffed some coke with Barack Obama, but nobody has. He admitted to dealing cocaine in his autobiography. But not a single person will come out and say, I bought my coke from Barack. Did he make it up? Did he need to just make up a path and then just kind of throw something lurid in there to make us all believe that, well, he's human after all? He didn't just come down from, you know, Mount Sinai. He didn't just, you know, rocket to Earth. The Lord's will be done. See, he's human. He dealt a little coke and sniffed a little too. Oh, he admitted to smoking some crack too, and smoking some joints every now and then. Is it all a lie? Yours truly is proud to say and would take a lie detector test and would wager all four of my adult children on this fact. I have never taken, tried, tested an illegal drug ever. I've never even tried a cigarette. Yeah, I drank a beer once, and it was horrible. I tried to drink a little liquor, but got sick. But I've never taken an illegal drug ever. Never. And how does that relate to the story I'm telling? Well, it relates this way. Barack Obama did all of those things, but not a single person can attest to being with him when he did. So one wonders, along with everything else, did Barack Obama make up the stories of dealing cocaine and snorting and all that? And why does the man who was relatively good looking not have a single girlfriend come out and kiss and tell? Not one. We've had Hillary Rodham's old boyfriends come out. We've certainly had a plethora, if you will, of Clinton's girlfriends come out. We've even had a couple come out for George Bush Sr. and the latter Bush. Oh, we've had the tales about Ronald Reagan's lady friends. Hey, and even Jimmy Carter had a couple of old girlfriends come out of the woodwork. But Barack Obama, not one. Why has there never been a single bimbo eruption from Barack Obama's past? I'm not calling the man gay. No. Asexual, perhaps. I'm not saying he's gay, but why doesn't the man have a girlfriend coming out? Why is there no lady coming out saying I dated Barack Obama? Why is there no man coming out saying I snorted some coke with Barack? I played pool with Barack. We shot marbles. We chased girls together back in high school. Wasn't that a great time? Not one. How's it going to look when he heads over to his 40th year high school reunion or 30th year college reunion? He's not going to have a single chum at his table saying that they hung together. No, no old school chums, no old girlfriends, nobody from Obama's youth, Nobody who knew him before he became famous. Until now. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Is not an option? Then you're just another lapdog. And here's why.
Let's get together this weekend. Hello, I'm Tesla.
Anyway, your call-in number is 917-388-4970. And we have been listening to Annie from Southern Sense, who's given us some of the benefit of her wit and wisdom.
Socialism is not an option in the round table roundup edition, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, we'll be back right after this.
Spend your weekends with socialism is not an option.
David from Stay Mad Radio.
I call in and I wanted to weigh in on the title of Bag.
Man, your show is right on point, and it's something I wanted to talk about for a little bit for a while now.
Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Socialism is not an option. I'm your host, Hessler. You're listening to the American Exceptionalism Edition. And we do have a fantastic show for you today. It's really a good one. It's part two. It's not your daddy's war. Welcome to Socialism is Not an Option, the Hot Topic Edition. I'm your host, Tesler.
The entire political process offends me, so.
Very, very interesting, folks. Another call on the line, and it looks like we've got Tony. Tony, is that you?
That's me, baby. I'm just looking at your showroom in absolute amazement.
We were there. I mean, we saw the bullshit that occurred back in the 60s. Man, I feel like I'm going back in time. Don't you feel that way?
Has been co-opted by all the leftover washout hippies of your generation.
That's right. You're absolutely correct. And their kids
have pretty much taken
it
over.
You are old.
Yes.
Spend your weekends with socialism is not an option.
WWWDB 24/7 Internet Talk Radio.
What college do you dream of sending your kids to? Yale, Harvard, Princeton.
Forget it. Those are the universities of yesteryear. The school of the future is COC.
Community Organizer College.
I'm a graduate, and I just took control of General Motors. And now I'm thinking of taking over Chrysler, too. Maybe. Or selling it to an Italian bicycle company, I think.
Want your kids to run a giant company? Or even an entire industry, like healthcare, banking, or insurance? Enroll him or her at COC, Community Organizer College.
So you want your darlings to have trillions of dollars of money to spread around? Apply to Community Organizer College. Our teachings are based on a major breakthrough in education. It's not what you know. It's what people think you know.
At COC, Community Organizer College, we don't waste time teaching English, history, math, science, or business management.
We teach cool. We teach pompous. We teach teleprompter, doublespeak, seducing the media.
Community Organizer College.
Where your kids can learn to run a company or a country. Who knows? Maybe the entire planet.
Community Organizer College. Capacity is limited. Better act now. For an application, dial 1-800-ACORN-COC.
It's not what you know. It's what people think you know.
All right, we're back.
Having trouble paying your mortgage and don't know what to do?
Let it play.
Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, where government lending just got easier.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank. In the past, did someone entice you to borrow too much money? Trick you into living above your means? Force you to lie about your income in order to get a loan? At the all-new Fenway Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, we don't care what you did or what you do. You deserve the American dream of home ownership.
And now, with our all-new free market loan program, you'll never, ever be able to get a mortgage you can't pay back. We'll pay it for you, for free.
The government got us into this mess, and the government will get us out.
The all-new Freddie Mac Fannie Mae, where paying back your mortgage just got a whole lot easier.
All right, I think now we're back, and without any interruptions. Okay. Hey, the Occupy Wall Street movement. Tomorrow is supposed to be. Oh, you're back. We're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. The call in number is 347-884-8500. Listen, tomorrow, D-Day for the Occupy Wall Street movement. The escalation is supposed to begin. Apparently, they're not getting enough attention, so they're going to ratchet it up a notch, talking about throwing some Molotov cocktails. Yeah, talking about throwing down a little. Talking about getting down and dirty and really, really tough. They're talking about shutting down Wall Street completely. Completely. And then shutting down the train system in New York and in other cities, a systematic, synchronized day of mayhem and lechery and debauchery and any other otcheries I can think of. Meanwhile, the dead clock has struck. Or is it stricken? Or is it struck? The dead clock has strikes. According to Fox News, the Fox Nation, the dead clock has strikes $15 trillion. We are now $15 trillion in debt. What would the founding fathers think of this mess we're in right here and now? While the president says that we, the people, or corporations, to be fair, companies, are lazy. Lazy while he parties down, golfs 89 times and counting, and just has a good time on the taxpayer dime. I guess it's our way of giving back some or shared sacrifice. Has the Occupy movement run out of steam? That's the headline in the Fox News, Fox Nation reporter, one of the headlines on the Fox Nation website. The decline and fall of Occupy Wall Street. American left has run out of steam. I don't know if that's true. I think these folks are just really getting started. And once it's gotten to the point where they're not getting their way, seriously, there's going to be some trouble. There's going to be even more trouble. The failure of Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street movement, and its decadent or descent into Lord of the Flies style chaos, and in many instances, thuggery, criminality, debauchery, rape, drug use, is all emblematic of a dramatic decline of the left in the United States. Think about this. How many of you have attended or watched or observed a Tea Party movement? Families, children, small children, teenagers, older people, midlife folks such as myself. Just kind of listening to a few speeches here and there, holding up a few benign signs, and cheering on the speakers of the day, and then taking our asses home. Done. Hardly knew we were even there, except for the little barricades and the, you know, the police that direct traffic and all that. Then it's over. A couple of hours. We've made our point, we've gotten on the news, we've gotten together, we've shared some ideas and some thoughts, and we're done. That's the right. That's an example of conservative dissent, dissent on the system that we have today. However, we have a situation where we have the Occupy Wall Street movement, massive amounts of drug use, pot smoking, destruction of property, demanding things for free. The ragtag encampments that President Obama earlier described as expressing the, quote, frustration that the American people feel, end quote. Which American people could the president be referring to? Well, my main man, Glenn Beck, had a guest on his show the other day, and he spoke to a new book coming out. Yes, one more coming out about our president's past, Barack Hussein Obama, speaking to his past and his ties to the Occupy Wall Street movement. Please indulge me for just a few minutes and take a listen. I know it's Glenn Beck's show, and some of you don't appreciate Glenn the way that I do. But now that Glenn has his own TV show, it's kind of hard to get the shows if you don't subscribe to them. So if you will, just indulge me for a few minutes and listen to this new, all these new revelations about our president, the guy that we put in office, and his ties to the Occupy Wall Street leftist movement. You're listening to the C. Robert
the
Jones
Barack
Situation
Obama
Report.
And the enemies within. Here's a guy who has spent his own money. He's from New Zealand. He's just a dad. And spent his own money to try to document what was going on. And he started when Obama first started running. And, Trevor, I think when you started, there wasn't anyone that was looking into any of this.
Well, that's right. I discovered his ties to Frank Marshall Davis, the Hawaiian communist. And because I was a student of the left and had been studying the communist and socialist networks for many years, I knew where to look. So immediately Obama was flagged to me, I started to delve into his background and the connections to the Marxists and socialists and the Communist Party members
it's
of Chicago is overwhelming.
Yeah. I've been following your stuff for a long time, and it's overwhelming. I get lost. I know this stuff. I mean, somewhat. And I get lost. It's difficult, but you now put it in this book, and we'll talk about it here a little bit. But I want to go first to Buck and say, what is the latest on the court? Because they kicked him out. Then around noon today, court said, "Oh, you can go back and bring your stuff. No property rights. What?"
Yeah, they put a temporary restraining order on essentially the eviction, but it looks like right now the judge has upheld the rights of the Zuccotti Park owners, Brookfield, to say you can come into the park, but you're not bringing your stuff, which pulls the whole makes the whole occupation come to a screeching halt there because they can't stay overnight.
They're not gonna go away.
No. They last night they were talking about they were sort of spitballing ideas. What's the secondary location? They were throwing out Union Square, Tompkins Square Park. I don't think they'd move to Central Park, but you know that was an idea last week. So you know they're looking
Union
around.
Square would be Union Square. That's right by Columbia University. I mean you're in the or not Columbia, but NYU, and it's I mean that's you're surrounded by support. You were there. You're watching these people. You think they're done?
I don't think they're done.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they were able to. They would have made it through the winter, the entire winter, if given the chance. But I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah.
The entertainment value there is high.
Okay.
But I don't think I think they're.
They're in for the long haul.
Yeah, I think so.
Trevor.
Yeah, I think they would have faded away through the winter anyway. A lot of them would go home.
But really regroup and get stronger.
They will come back big time in the spring and right through next summer, and they will create merry hell in every city in America that they can get away with. I think they will probably do things like attack the Republican Party convention next year in Tampa. I think there will be...
All right, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Listen, let me ask you this. The audience there, the folks listening to the show, listen. Do you think this movement is done? Do you think that the movement as it is, such as it is finished? Pretty much the winter's going to come around and they're all just going to go home and kind of go smoke some weed and, you know, and smoke a little crack and shoot up a little dope and, you know, drink a whole lot of beer and wine and, you know, just get drunk and then... You know, spring comes around and things start to thaw out a little bit. It starts to get a little warmer. Folks start coming back and doing it all over again. Do you think that, like the Tea Party, You know, it's something that's just not going to go away. No matter how much the left would like for the Tea Party to go away, we're not going away. Do you think that this could be the case for the Occupy Wall Street? Or maybe these are simply a bunch of flakes who want some attention. They're going to get the attention because the liberal media can't help themselves. They're falling all over these folks. You know, it's been said that our country is center-right country. If our country is a center-right country, then why is it that the media leads hard left? The mainstream media. It's an interesting name, an interesting title, a moniker, mainstream media. If the country is center-right, then why is the media labeled mainstream when they are far left? I mean, for God's sake, we've got pictures of people taking a piss on a squad car. We've got pictures of a man dropping trowel and taking a, you know, defecating on a squad car. And it's bizarre behavior. And the media, they don't play this up. They don't complain. Not at all. What the hell is that noise? I don't have a phone ringing in here. I don't know, man. Well, the downfall of the Occupy Wall Street crowd mirrors a broader malaise of the left. Just 3 years after the election of the hope and change president, liberalism in America is in a state of crisis. We see it on TV with this Occupy OWS movement. Recent Gallup polls show just 1 in 5 Americans, 21%, calling themselves liberal. Just 21%? This compares to 42% who are self-described conservatives. But after an historic midterm election victory, Republicans now control the House of Representatives and are on the verge, in a very strong position, to retake the Senate in 2012. President Obama, who was one of the most, if not the most popular president in the history of the modern presidency, is now the most unpopular president in modern U.S. history. And at this stage of his presidency, with approval ratings struggling to climb above the low 40s, and with 73% of the American people believing the nation is moving down the wrong track, his big government agenda has proved to be a disaster. But yet he pushes on. Profiles in courage or profiles in stupidity? You decide. Another Gallup poll shows that 57% of Americans with little or no confidence in the federal government. They have little or no confidence in the federal government to solve domestic problems. Massive bailouts, excessive public spending, and heavy borrowing have fueled the biggest budget deficit since World War II. Now, when President Obama took office, the national debt was just slightly more than $10 trillion. Just 3 years into his presidency, we're at $15 trillion. Folks, we are in a situation of steep decline in market contrast. Conservatism has undergone a profound revival. Since Obama entered the Oval Office, as I've noted many times before, the Tea Party has been the most influential U.S. political movement of the early 21st century, fundamentally transforming the political landscape. On Capitol Hill, a new wave of innovative conservative leaders has emerged, strongly pushing a Reagan-Thatcher-inspired small government agenda. Among them, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, Republican Study Comment Chairman Jim Jordan, and Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. At the same time, America's conservative media has surged, with Fox News Channel leading the cable markets by a mile in almost every demographic. And the Wall Street Journal overtaking USA Today as the biggest selling national newspaper. Conservative-dominated talk radio continues to command the airwaves with Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levine, and Laura Ingraham, drawing in a combined weekly audience of tens of millions and a plethora, one of my favorite words, of new conservative broadcasters have entered the scene, including Hollywood producer Doug Urbanski. Hey, and Blog Talk Radio. The most popular blog talk radio shows are conservative talk radio shows by a mile. It is now cool to be a conservative. It's now hip. You can be one of those folks who say you were conservative when conservatism was not cool. You were a conservative when conservatism was not cool. Now it's hip to be square. It's hip to be a conservative. Blog Talk Radio takes off with the conservative movement. Ayn Rand's books, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead, have taken off once again, more than 50 years after its first publication. The movie, Atlas Shrugged, a big hit, two more to follow. America is, in my opinion, no longer center-right, but moving further and further to the right. They say that everything is cyclical. Life is cyclical. Remember when some of us wore bell bottoms? And then bell bottoms were out of fashion. Straight leg trousers were in. Then, in my lifetime, bell bottoms came back. And then they went out again. And then we were back to straight leg trousers again. Yeah, cyclical. Conservatism is coming back. It's making a comeback from the 50s, from the 40s. Conservatism is back. Remember, the 60s brought in a new form of liberalism. Just do it. The 70s, the 80s, the 90s, do it. If you feel like it, do it. If it feels good, do it. Do it. Do it till you're satisfied. It's all about doing what you feel. And have you ever noticed that when you speak to a liberal, they never tell you, I think, They never say, start a sentence off with, I think, or I know. It's, I feel. Well, this is how I feel about the situation. I feel this way. It's about feeling. I feel. And how much I feel. Not about what you think, not about what you know, but how you feel. Well, we're moving away from that. We're getting back to a point where it's all about America. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. It is now all about taking responsibility. And ironically, speaking of that, Eric Holder, our attorney general, refuses to take responsibility for Fast and Furious. Our president refuses to take responsibility for the economy. It's still either George Bush's fault or a tsunami or a hurricane or some fool in Europe or the neighbor's dog. It's anybody's fault but his. What kind of men has America bred these days? Like I said yesterday, remember when we were men? Remember our fathers, the men we looked up to, our dads. Now, those were men. They took responsibility. Consequences be damned. Men like Barack Obama and Eric Holder are not men. Not in the America I came from. They're a bunch of clowns. How could you not take responsibility for what's going on in your department? Eric Holder said, well, I supervise over 100,000 people. There are 100,000 people in my in the Justice Department. I can't be expected to know everything. I can't be expected to this. I can't be expected to that. It's not my fault. I come from an era, as do many of you, where even if it wasn't your fault, damn it, you took responsibility because that's what a man does. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no, you know, you just do because that's what men do. It's part of being a man. You take responsibility. Why couldn't Eric Holder sit before Congress and say, the buck stops with me. I take responsibility. No, I didn't know about it, but that doesn't matter. I'm the responsible man in charge. Why can't our president say the same damn thing? I'm in charge. I'm the man in charge. It's simple. Let me play the clip for you of a man, a president, taking charge of a disaster. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Trevor Loudon is the author of Barack Obama and the Kennedys Within. Here's a guy who
has 100 fathers and defeat is lost.
He's from New Zealand.
And I've said as much as I feel can be usefully said by me in regard to the events of the past few days. Further statements, detailed discussions are not to conceal responsibility because I'm the responsible officer of the government. But merely because I, and that is quite obvious, but merely because I do not believe that such a discussion would benefit us during the present difficult situation.
In June of 1961, President Kennedy, his national and personal prestige weakened by the Bay of Pigs, met a tough, seasoned Nikita Khrushchev. The meeting place was Vienna, but the flashpoint was Berlin. Khrushchev had vowed to eradicate the splinter from the heart of Europe. The president, in a July speech, called it an ultimatum, a choice between Holocaust and surrender.
All right, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm going to do that one more time because it's important. And, you know, Glenn Beck's clip kind of stepped over a little bit of it. But once again, not the greatest president, John F. Kennedy. Certainly not the most moral, but a man. A man who came from an era, a time, a generation that took responsibility for failures equally as they would for successes. One more time.
There's an old saying that victory has 100 fathers and defeat is an orphan. And I've said as much as I feel can be usefully said by me in regard to the events of the past few days. Further statements, detailed discussions are not to conceal responsibility because I'm the responsible officer of the government, but merely because I, and that is quite obvious, but merely because I do not believe that such a discussion would benefit us during the present difficult.
There it is, folks. Responsibility. A president who had his flaws taking responsibility. Can't wait. Tesla just sent me a message. I'm looking forward to that one. Thanks, Tesla. When the history of the Obama administration is written, one of its most heinous crimes will be its deliberate policy of destroying America's superiority, American superiority. You see, liberals don't like the idea of America being superior or being exceptional. Liberals don't like that kind of talk because we shouldn't consider ourselves to be better than anyone else or any other country. We're just one country among many, and no country is better than the other another. We're living in a time of so many firsts. It is difficult to get one's arms and one's mind around it. As I said many times, America is being tested in a way she's never been tested before. And you won't like what comes after America, folks. In the first year of the post-American presidency, both Iran and North Korea were emboldened to press forward with their nuclear weapons program. At the end of December 2009, a professor of international relations at Beijing, China's Foreign Affairs University, was blunt when he said, and I quote, "The world is worse off than a year ago," end quote. Iran and North Korea will not give up. Mark Fitzpatrick of the London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies said flatly about Iran and North Korea, "Nothing seems to have worked." I quote, "Nothing seems to have worked," end quote. UN sanctions proved powerless, even to slow them down. Obama's repeated calls for negotiations came to nothing. Nations that have depended upon the United States to aid in their defense, notably Israel and the Asian states surrounding North Korea, are quietly exploring other options in the new post-American world. And that's after just a year of Obama. Imagine what the world will be like after 4 years of this post-American presidency. Obama has moved against free speech and free media, raised taxes, and moved to nationalize the healthcare system. In what arena has he ever endorsed the independence of thought, action, or prosperity? Folks, America is not dead. But it is time to stand up, fight. Defiance is our answer. This is the quintessentially American answer to overwhelming government authority. For the first time in modern history, during the first months of the Obama administration, millions of Americans took to the streets to protest big government. The protesters came in all races, creeds, colors, and ages. This was not a movement limited to one's demographic group. It was a distinctly American movement, and while the media tried to pigeonhole it with limited labels like tea parties, town hall meetings, or 9/12ers, in reality, it was a singular expression of outrage that heralded the beginning of a new American revolution. It was an ordinarily docile population motivated to take to the streets of their towns and cities or jump into the car and head to D.C. to try to stop Obama and the Democrats from plunging the freest nation on earth down the road to serfdom. These protests were a great American movement, unlike the OWS movement. And they were ignored in official Washington. The will of the people was diminished the way the autocrat ruler would turn away from supplicants who hauntingly were indifferent. It spoke volumes as to what we were dealing with in the White House, the Senate, and the House. But we took back the House. Now, next is the Senate, and then the presidency. America is under siege, folks. Don't you forget it. The people are peacefully rebelling, unlike the OWS crowd, and are being summarily ignored, unlike the OWS crowd. So what's to be done? We've got to vote them out in 2012. Obama's got to go in 2012, or else America will be finished. I believe that. We must kick them out in 2012. We must do this. There is no other option. We must get involved in local politics. Start with your school boards, city councils. Become a precinct captain. Do what you must. America is depending on us. We're the only ones. We're the only ones left. Talk about saving the planet. Well, first, let's start with saving America. We've got to keep the devil down in the hole because suicide is painless. Oh, yeah. Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Tesla, Melinda, all you folks who come in to listen, thank you so much. God bless you. Beach Bomb. John Galt, and your faith.
Visions of the things to be. The things that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see. That suicide is painless.
All right, good night, Charlie.
It brings
God bless
on many God changes.
United States of America.
And I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say. Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. And I can take or leave it if I please. The sword of time will pierce our skin. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. Take or leave it if I please. And